Welcome to the Big Mike Fun Podcast, where you learn about advanced wealth building strategies from real estate investing to creating massive ROI and secure retirement profits. So pour yourself a cup of coffee, grab a notepad, and lean in. Because Big Mike has got the mic, starting now.
Welcome to the Big Mike Fun Podcast. I'm the Big Mike.
Mike Zlotnik, and today it is my pleasure and a privilege to welcome Yona Weiss. Hi, Yona.
Hey, Big Mike. Thanks for having me on the show.
Thank you very much for coming on the podcast. Yona hails from Lakewood, New Jersey. He is with Medisys Specs, one of the leading cost segregation companies in the United States. So thank you again, Yona, for coming. And before we dive, give us a little bit about you, your family. I just love to say I'm married to my wonderful wife, four monkeys and a cat, four kids and a cat. Tell us a little bit about your family.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, I'm married almost 21 years, six children. And you mentioned hail from Lakewood, New Jersey. I actually currently live in Israel, but do all my work remotely. So originally from the U.S., from Los Angeles. And our company, Medisys Specs, is based in our headquarters is in Lakewood, New Jersey. So definitely have spent a lot of time there as well, traveling back and forth. But yeah, just, you know, living life, enjoying doing the cost seg. And what else is what else we need to know?
Makes sense. Yeah. And obviously our thoughts and prayers with our brothers and sisters in Israel. It's been a tough period of time. So
yeah, it's been absolutely. Thank you.
All right, let's talk a little bit about cost segregation. So would you be so kind as to give audience a high level overview? Cost segregation in its nature, what it does, how are you able to achieve what you achieve? It's an engineering study of sort of these properties, multifamily, may it be industrial, shopping plazas, and so on. How do you accelerate and provide bonus depreciation? It's a great tax benefit, and a lot of investors look forward to bonus depreciation. But just talk about the basics. How does the process work?
So first of all, cost segregation is a weird name, right? It's just an accelerated version of depreciation. So obviously depreciation is probably the greatest tax benefit that there is when it comes to owning business or rental properties. And the process is pretty straightforward. It can be done for any type of property whatsoever besides for your primary residence. So as long as, like I said, is a business or rental property, can be retail, industrial, office, multifamily, single family, you know, you name it, really any type of property, like I said, can benefit from it. The process is pretty straightforward. It is an engineering process. So it's something breaking down the building into its components, as opposed to depreciating the whole thing over a 27 and a half or 39 year period, which essentially is just like taking a little bit of deduction every single year. The amazing thing is that you can literally write off the whole value of your property, but it takes a long time, right? A little bit every year. So the benefit of cost segregation is taking that pool of potential deductions and taking a big chunk of them in the first year or the first few years. So we're accelerating depreciation and pulling from that pool of potential deductions to create more cash flow during the earlier years of ownership.
It makes great sense. So mechanically, it's beautiful. Bonus depreciation comes in and accelerates 5, 7, 15-year schedule. So let's just dive it into a little bit of detail. What falls in the 5-year schedule, 7-year, 15-year? Because those are the items that get accelerated through the bonus depreciation.
That's correct. So the main things that get accelerated, like you said, the main two categories are the 5-year and the 15-year. And those are described as 5-year is personal or tangible property, and essentially means anything that's non-structural. Okay, so that can even include, obviously, appliances and furniture and equipment and stuff like that. That's really movable, we understand. But even things that are deemed non-structural, like vinyl flooring or carpeting, countertops, cabinets. You're talking about in an industrial property, you may not have a lot. You have shelving, you may have security systems and things like that. But when you go into a multifamily property, for example, you have those countertops, you have the cabinets, you have carpeting, you have all the window treatments, even millwork and things like that all goes into the 5-year category. And there's a lot more. And then the 15-year, which is the other main thing, is considered land improvements. So land itself does not depreciate. So we're always going to need to subtract a small amount of land from our purchase price to establish how much we can depreciate. But the land improvements, meaning anything that's on top of the land, does depreciate on a 15-year schedule. So that can be like landscaping or pavement, concrete. If you have in a retail property, for example, you have a large parking lot, all of that pavement and concrete is depreciable over that 15-year schedule, accelerated. If you have, and also the signage, if you have a multifamily property, you may have a swimming pool and all that concrete is depreciated as well. You may have a dog park or playground equipment, et cetera, fencing. All of that is going to go into that 15-year category. So all in all, when we're adding up the 5 and the 15-year accelerated depreciation categories, it can be up to, you know, upwards of 20 or 30% or sometimes even more of the whole property value is in those accelerated categories. So that's why it's so important to take those deductions faster.
Yeah, it's very powerful. I guess there's a little bit of variance, and that's why an engineer comes out and expresses their opinion. But we've seen 25 to 30% being standard multifamily. Of course, it's different on different asset classes. But it's really interesting to say that even a swimming pool, if you're building out or renovating a swimming pool, that can also bonus depreciated, even though it doesn't feel like it's not your carpeting, it's not your vinyls or any of that stuff. But all of this can fall under the bonus depreciation acceleration.
Yes, exactly.
How long does it take to do a study like this? And what does it cost? Just curious, relative to the size of the property. It's almost a no-brainer because most of these times, these tax benefits, accelerated tax benefits, pay for the cost of the study immediately. But just give us an idea of what it costs typically to run a cost-sex study.
So it's never going to be contingent on the tax savings, and that's what's great. It's going to be a flat fee based on the size and type of property. Typically, on average, they run about $5,000-$6,000. Currently, you know, at the time of this recording, I can't speak of, you know, what it may be in the future, but it used to be limited to a lot of people. And people think even still today that it may cost $30,000 or $40,000 to get one of these things done. And that actually was the case about 10 years ago and was really only limited to like the big accounting firms, like the big four were the only ones that were, you know, 15, 20 years ago, were the only ones that were actually doing cost segregation. And so, yeah, that's where they were charging $50,000 to do it because their clients were, you know, large corporations or REITs and things like that and could afford it and didn't matter because it was their accounting firm that was doing it anyways. Today, obviously, there are many, many cost segregation companies around the country that do this professionally with, you know, their own engineers employed. And so, yeah, it's become a lot more affordable. And so this can make sense. You know, a lot of people ask, okay, so $5,000 doesn't seem like a lot. At what point does this make sense to do, right? And again, people would think that, and erroneously, I get this all the time, one of the biggest misconceptions is this can only be done on big commercial properties. And really, you know, my single family rental, it's not even appropriate. It's not relevant to me. And that's just simply not the case. I mean, when you look at the actual numbers, and one of the things we like to do is run a free upfront, you know, estimate or feasibility analysis for any property. And when you see those numbers, you know, yeah, it may cost you a few thousand dollars to get it done, but the after-tax benefits are going to be 10x of what those costs are. So my starting point is really, believe it or not, any property purchased for over $200,000 makes sense to look into costing. Now, it may not make sense to get it done because obviously everyone's tax situation is different. And this is a strategy, so it's not for everyone at every time and every property, but it can be. And so, you know, no longer is it limited to, you know, these huge commercial properties that, you know, $5 million building. No, even if you have a smaller property, definitely worthwhile to look into.
Well, that's a revelation. I didn't know that. I thought, you know, it's $20 million asset. It's a no-brainer to do or bigger, right? Obviously, the bigger they are, the more economical it is. And I assume the price is obviously a function of the size of the property. So if you're doing $200-$300, it's one thing. But if you're doing a $1,000 large property, you will charge somewhat more because there's more work for the engineer.
Slightly, but believe it or not, not that much more. Meaning in a rare occasion, we're going to get above, you know, a $10,000 you know, fee for a study, even if we're talking about like,
you want $1,000 doors.
Yeah. Even $1,000 doors, even like a million square foot, you know, industrial property or something like that, or, you know, a 300,000 square foot, you know, a skyscraper. Yeah. It may cost, you know, we may charge $10,000, $15,000, but when you're talking about it's not proportionate to the actual benefits. You know, if you buy a property, a skyscraper for, you know, $300 million, you know, paying $15,000 to get a study done is like a drop in the bucket. Whereas if you buy, you know, a $3 million multifamily property, you know, $5,000. And so obviously the benefits are not proportional to the cost.
Yeah, it makes sense. But the revelation is that even for small properties, under some circumstances, it makes sense.
Exactly.
I remember years ago, one of the mastermind events I went to, there was a company that was offering this on portfolios of the turnkeys. It was so crazy. They were coming in and saying, okay, we will cost sag your entire portfolio of 300 doors spread all over the map, which was kind of fascinating how they do it. But I guess your argument that any property over a few $100,000, you could justify under the right circumstances. Of course, if you go over a few million, the math becomes much easier, and the bigger they are, the more economical it is per square foot or per dollar. So how do you go about, or this is a CPA discussion, what to bonus accelerate, what not to bonus accelerate, or is it almost always, there's no drawback? What's the drawback if you bonus accelerate 5 and 15 a year, no matter what? You're just going to take deduction. If you can't use it all in 1 year, just carry forward, right? That's the general thought process.
Correct. Yeah. Any additional deductions that you can't use in the current year will be carried forward. You can use in future years. And so it's usually going to be beneficial. Now, you talk about bonus depreciation is slightly different than the cost segregation itself, in that there was a rule passed a few years ago where you're able to take all those accelerated deductions in the first year. That's called bonus depreciation. So once you do a cost segregation study and identify the 5-year and the 15-year assets like we talked about before, personal property or land improvements, you're actually able to take 100% of those deductions in the first year. And so that was called 100% bonus depreciation. It's subsequently been phased down to 80% during 2023 acquisitions. In 2024, it's gone down to 60% bonus, meaning you can take 60% of those accelerated deductions in the first year. And I know we talked about it a little before the show. There's currently a bill in Congress, in the Senate, to be passed to reinstate it back to 100% bonus depreciation.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that. That's welcome news. From what I heard, it's in the Congress. And of course, there are political divisions, but I like to call there are well-off Republican real estate investors and well-off Democratic real estate investors. So they both, I think, want it because it is a very popular deduction and it's been used. So from what I heard, again, of course, subject to what the Congress will decide to do, they'll retroactively go back to even 23 and allow 100% bonus in 23 and obviously change 24. And I don't know what they're going to do on a forward basis. But right. If this were to happen, it'd be very, very beneficial for the industry.
Yeah, and it's quite fascinating. I think, like you said, yeah, obviously there are politicians on both sides of the aisle that would benefit from this. The amazing thing is that the bill was already passed in the House with a resounding majority on both sides, because the bill is not just bonus depreciation. Just to kind of clarify this, there's, you know, it's a family I think Tax Reduction Act. And so there's a lot of different things in there, including child tax credits and other things that would, you know, basically tax benefits for families and the economy in general. So it was passed resoundingly in the House, like I said. However, bureaucracy is really what's holding it up more than anything. I think it's not that it hasn't even gone to the Senate to vote yet. So once it does, I would assume it would pass relatively quickly. Again, with support on both sides of the aisle.
Yeah, and that's great. And my quick comment is it's funny how every single one of these bills has this wonderful name, Family Savings Act or Family Tax Reduction Act or Family Support Act. They come up with these very great sounding names. And then they jam in all kinds of interesting stuff in them. Obviously, things some needed for our industry and some other things needed for the special purposes, special needs, just how the Congress operates.
Yeah.
All right. So let's talk a little bit about second year. So first year, COSEC gets done, bonus. Is there anything that can be done second year? In other words, projects that go through renovations and improvements, and some money gets spent. I'm just curious what you've done with some of the clients. First year, is there anything for the second year that can be also accelerated?
Yeah, so the first thing we always do, like I said, we'll run that feasibility analysis. And then you're looking at doing a cost seg on the property. It's a one-time thing that's done on the acquisition. However, when you do improvements, then you can do a cost seg on those improvements. So it's looked at a little bit separately, meaning they're going to be on different depreciation schedules. So it's not all lumped in together. However, like I said, once you do the costing on the acquisition, you're going to get the majority of the benefits accelerating that depreciation. In the second year or in subsequent years, if you do renovations and are spending money, all that money should be and can be capitalized and depreciated. And if you want to maximize the benefits, you'll want to do a cost seg on the improvements, again, because you're going to get the those benefits at an accelerated pace. And especially because of the bonus depreciation, you can take a large percent of those deductions in the first year.
Appreciate that clarification. It's no number of sponsors and operators who have done this. So especially when a heavy value add renovations, where there's a lot of work gets done after the acquisition, this becomes a lot more relevant in the second and third year. However long it takes, getting those tax savings is important too. So what happens on the other end of the spectrum? And this is more of a CPA question, but folks have asked. So we got all these wonderful bonus depreciation quite often. Depending on how these deals are structured, but you could have even capital accounts going negative. So somebody writes a check into syndication and then they have a substantial leverage, a lot of debt. It's changed, of course, with banks tightening up. A few years ago, it was the norm. Might come back again when leverage is high and the equity invested is actually less than the total amount of tax benefits. So as a result, folks go into negative capital accounts where they write off the entire investment and even go to a negative number. When the property sells, whether the number is positive or negative doesn't matter, but they've taken all this deduction up front. What normally happens? Is it generally treated as a recapture or is it treated as a capital gain on sale? And the other important element is how long do you hold the property? Because I've seen a few different versions. I'll let you kind of elaborate a little more on this. But imagine a flavors where a property is owned for at least 3 years. There were heavy value add renovations after acquisition, and all these depreciated items have been replaced. I've heard those items can certainly be treated as capital gains because the property value increased. So just would love to hear your thoughts on that.
I mean, it is a little bit complicated. Obviously, we're getting into the weeds a little bit here, but yeah, anytime you sell a property, you're going to have a recapture tax, which is essentially treated like a capital gain. However, it's taxed on three different schedules, right? Three different rates that is taxed at, because there are different components in the property that are going to be recaptured at different rates. Now, recapture doesn't mean that you're paying back the depreciation. It's a common misnomer. We get a lot. People say, oh, you take this depreciation, it's going to be quote unquote recaptured, meaning I'm going to have to pay it all back. No, you're going to be taxed on that amount, and it's similar to a capital gain. However, like you said, there are strategies that can be done to actually reduce that capital gain, or that gain, or that recapture tax. And one of the most common is something called a partial asset disposition, which means once you've done a cost seg and you've allocated the different components to these different, 5 year, 15 year, let's say, you have the carpet, right? The carpeting in the building, let's say it's worth $10,000. Okay. Now I've allocated $10,000 to that on a 5 year schedule. When I go to sell a building, and I've already allocated that, and it's been 5 years, or even if it's been less, I can literally write on a tax form called partial asset disposition that that carpet has already been depreciated, no longer has value because I've shown that with the cost seg, and I no longer have recapture tax on that amount. So you can actually reduce your 5 year recapture amount, which is a big portion, especially when you're doing costing, you're doing the bonus depreciation. You can reduce that, to almost zero in many cases. So it's, yes, it is something that has to be looked at. And obviously, if you are doing improvements, similarly, if you are replacing carpeting, a few years down, you're going to write off the value of the carpet that you originally cost segregated. And so you no longer have the recapture on that, et cetera. Again, there are a few different ways to reduce this tax, or even defer it, like a 1031 exchange can defer that capital gain, can refer defer that capital, excuse me, that recapture tax as well.
Yeah, I appreciate that. That technique reduces potential recapture, number one. Number two, 1031 exchange takes care of the business if it's a truly exchange, or even if there is some recapture, those recapture items can be also offset with a fresh investment and a fresh bonus depreciation, fresh cost seg, where new passive losses come in, and then they wipe off those passive gains that come in on the recapture. So, yeah, those are both. We call it pseudo 1031 by selling a property, investing the money to something else, and having passive losses or new bonus depreciation offset the passive gains from the sale. So, what other things that again, multifamily is one of the most common asset classes, but let's just talk about a few other asset classes that you have done. So I'm just curious, obviously industrial has been popular. We've also seen quite a bit of resurrection of retail, open air shopping. They've come back. It was kind of a scared asset class with the Amazon effect, e-commerce, but it has held up pretty well. Very limited new construction, existing properties continue to get better rent per square foot. Have you done those? I'm just curious if we can go a little bit beyond multifamily. What have you
Sure.
done in shopping? Maybe some self-storage, industrial.
Yeah, I mean, all of the above are amazing asset classes. I think, you know, we're the biggest national cost rate company, so we're doing thousands of these a year, every single type of property. I think one that gets overlooked a lot is self-storage because people think of it, okay, similar to like a warehouse where you would think there's really not much in there. Well, when it comes to storage, sure, there are differences in types of self-storage buildings. So if you're talking about like a block, you know, building, there's not going to be much there. But if you're dealing with kind of an open area self-storage property where there's a lot of land improvements, a lot of the pavement, like we talked about before, all that goes in the 15-year category, there's a lot there, as well as when there's climate control, where a lot of obviously new development and newer self-storage facilities have the climate control. That's actually a big factor and goes into the 5-year. All the HVAC units there go into the 5-year category, and therefore it's going to be a big amount is going to be going to the faster depreciation rates, upwards of, you know, sometimes 35 or 40% of the total purchase price is going to go into the accelerated depreciation categories with cost-seg. Another category, you know, type of property that's gotten a lot of traction over the past few years, and believe it or not, we talked about, you know, size and types of properties, is short-term rentals, right? Single-family properties, where, you know, different from long-term rentals for a couple of reasons, right? Long-term single-family properties typically aren't the best for cost-seg for a couple of reasons, but one reason is, with a short-term rental, you typically own all of the furniture and all of the appliances and all the amenities, and so that can add up to a lot. Whereas in a long-term rental, you may not own that; the tenant may own all of that stuff. So there's going to be less benefit there on the 5-year category. The second thing is there's actually a different rule in the tax code when it comes to short-term rentals and the passive loss rules. You know, typically speaking, if you own a rental property, any income that's coming from that rental property is considered passive income and can only, and depreciation and cost can only be used to offset your passive income. Okay. Unless there's a couple exceptions to the rule. If you're a real estate professional, if your full-time job is in real estate, then you can use those passive losses, those deductions against your active income, anything like that. Short-term rentals, believe it or not, have a totally different rule. And therefore, if you self-manage a short-term rental, and that's an important factor here, self-managing and materially participating in that, you no longer have that passive loss limitation, meaning you can use cost-seg to offset your W-2 income, which is not the case with any other type of real estate. And so it's a big you know, asset class that's gotten a lot of attention because of that rule.
That's fascinating. So I appreciate that explanation. I didn't know that. I learned something on the call. But the short-term income from the short-term rentals, obviously material participation and self-management, classifies this as an active income or loss if you cost-seg the property. And then you can offset it against the current income without being a real estate professional. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, and that's, yeah, exactly. And that's the most amazing thing. You know, typically you have people, you know, it's limited. Cost-seg is beneficial for real estate professionals, right? But not necessarily for someone who's not. And short-term rentals is beneficial even if you're not a real estate professional.
As if you own an, I guess it's considered to be an active business. That's I guess
Correct.
that's why it's falling into that category that you own a business, so it'll show up as business loss, the results of the cost seg.
Exactly. Also, like car washes too. Car washes are also another case where it's like that. It's like a business.
Interestingly, yeah, that's very powerful. And these businesses, well, these are real estate investments are partially active businesses. It's kind of funny. Real estate in general is passive and with exception of real estate that is let's just call them semi-active. Like you're saying, short-term rentals, car washes. What about senior living? I've heard of are those falling into the same category, assisted living, senior living?
It can be, yeah, it can be an active business in that regard as well. Obviously, there's a lot of factors involved, but make sure, and we probably should have said this at the beginning, right? This is not legal advice or tax advice, right? Make
Talk to
sure
your
to
CPA,
discuss
full disclaimer, consult with your attorney, CPA
it.
professional.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's very powerful. Really, really great podcast. A couple of final thoughts. Anything else? Anything you want to share? Any sort of good book that folks should read? Or at the end of the day, if they have a project, any real estate, you said it's down to a couple hundred thousand, worth having a conversation with you to see if this is a good match. And obviously, if it is, they should check with their CPA. Some are no-brainer projects and some are borderline, and that's where it's worth to chat.
Yeah, absolutely. I would say one thing, I just mentioned another thing that often gets overlooked is people think that you can only do this in the first year. And this is actually something that you can do a cost segregation on a property that you've owned for a number of years, and you don't have to go back and amend your tax return. And so that's another huge benefit about this is that it's a strategy that can be used at any time that is best for you.
That's very powerful. You can wake up one day not knowing that you could have done it and just do it today and basically take advantage of the opportunity. It's kind of very, very powerful.
Yeah.
Appreciate the sharing. What's the best way for folks to reach out to you? Is there a good website, email? How do folks reach out to have the conversation, to ask about their project and to learn what you can do for them?
Yeah, I mean, you can go to yonaweiss.com. That's my personal website. You can also find me on all the social media platforms. Just my name, Yona Weiss. Like we mentioned, Madison Specs, the biggest national cost estimate company working for. And yeah, check us out anywhere you find us.
Thank you, Yon. I appreciate your wisdom. Thank you for coming on a podcast and sharing, and much appreciated.
My pleasure, Big Mike. Thanks so much.
Thank you for listening to the Big Mike Fund Podcast. To receive your copy of Mike's How to Choose a Smart Real Estate Fund book, head to BigMikeFund.com or visit Amazon and type Mike's slot name. Keep listening and keep investing Big Mike style. See you on the next episode.